Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. I'm Rachel Isaacs, a student from Manalapan, New Jersey, and the engineer for this program. We look forward to learning some Torah with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Today we are joined by Rabbi Meir Schweiger, a faculty member and the Mashgiach Ruchani, or spiritual guide at Pardes, who will be teaching us about Parshat Korach. A few quick announcements, and then we'll hand it over to Rabbi Schweiger. Your participation and feedback is vital for the success of the podcast series. Please send us comments on the episode, where you live, and how you heard about us. Send your email to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thank you. That's it, and now Rabbi Schweiger.
Thank you, Rachel. Okay, I'd like to begin by saying, for the people in the diaspora, this is your parsha. For the people in Israel, I apologize that we are a week behind, but hopefully we will all catch up in another few weeks. I want to begin by quoting a Mishnah which appears in Pirkei Avot, Ethics of the Fathers, Chapter 5, Mishnah 20. Kol machloket shehi l'shem shamayim, any argument, dispute, which is for the sake of heaven, sofo lehitkayem, sofa lehitkayem. In the end, it will be sustained. V'she'ena l'shem shamayim, but anyone which is not for the sake of heaven, ein sofa lehitkayem. Its end is not to be sustained. Eizohi machloket shehi l'shem shamayim, what is considered to be an argument for the sake of heaven? Zo machloket Hillel v'shamay. This is the argument of Hillel and Shammai. V'she'ena l'shem shamayim, what is an example of something which is not for the sake of heaven? Zo machloket Korach v'chol adato. This is the argument of Korach and his congregation. One thing which I'd immediately like to point out is that there's actually a very interesting asymmetry in this verse, in this Mishnah. It should have said, when it speaks about Korach, Korach and Moshe, because they are the two sides to the dispute. Interestingly, it doesn't mention Moshe, but it mentions Korach and his congregation. We will come back to this point later on. The topic which I'm interested in looking at today is what I would call the culture of dispute or of argument. And evidently from this Mishnah, it seems that arguing may very well be a positive thing. But whether it's positive or negative depends on how it's done. And the way it's defined in the Mishnah is it for the sake of heaven? Is it not for the sake of heaven? I would like to examine our parsha, the opening verses, and see if we can begin to understand what does it mean to have an argument which is not for the sake of heaven. Chapter 16 in the book of Numbers, verse 1. And I'll translate. And Korach, the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kahat, the son of Levi, took, and Datan and Aviram, the sons of Eliav, and On ben Pelet, On the son of Pelet, from the tribe of Reuven. And they rose up, verse 2, they rose up before Moses and people from among the Jewish nation, 250, princes of the community, men of name, those who were called to the appointed meetings. And now we come to the key verse, verse 3. And they gathered upon Moses and Aaron, and they said to them, enough to you, for the whole congregation, they are all holy, and in their midst is God. And why should you raise yourself up on the congregation of God? If we look at the issue which is being raised, it certainly seems to be a legitimate issue. The issue is, why should some people be quote-unquote holier than others? Everybody should be equally holy. And perhaps, just so that you appreciate what the ramifications of this are, as we see in the continuation of the story, why is it that only some people are given access to the tabernacle, to service of God in the tabernacle, whereas most of the people are excluded? Why shouldn't anybody be able to go into the tabernacle and serve God? Why is it only the priests are allowed to do so? Why should the high priest be the one who's given the allowance to go into the Holy of Holies, and everyone else excluded? One could take that a step further. Why should Moses have an intimate relationship with God, speak to God? Why shouldn't everybody be able to have that relationship? At face value, I said a moment ago, this is a very legitimate question, issue. And it could very well be coming from a very legitimate place of people who honestly want to be able to have a very intimate relationship with God and not be excluded from that. So why does it seem that this is a problem? And clearly, as the events develop, Korach and his men are seen as doing something very, very negative. Let's look at a few things that appear in this verse. First thing, it says in the beginning of the verse, verse 3, Vayikahalu al Moshe va'al Aharon. They gather on Moses and Aaron. By using the word, they gather on them, as opposed to before them, lifnei, there is a certain nuance which is being articulated. When you come before somebody, there's a certain acknowledgement, perhaps, of respect. There may be an acknowledgement of a certain position which the person has. You now come before them, you have an audience with them. When you come upon them, by using the word upon, there's the imagery of imposing yourself on someone, or even more so, of putting yourself above that person, putting yourself in a situation where you are dictating to that person. In fact, it would seem to be that when Korach and this group come to Moshe, they are not asking a question, but in fact making a statement. And we perhaps should see this as being a rhetorical question, which is really a statement. And if we took it one step further, it may be a statement which is meant to be provocative, to be confrontative. And this perhaps is reflected in two other things that are mentioned in the verse. Before they bring up their issue, the first thing which they say is, Rav lachem, enough to you. What does it mean, enough to you? Enough to you would seem to be saying, you have arrogated to yourselves too much. And when I look at the end of the verse, when they say, Madua titnasu al kahal Hashem, why do you raise yourself up, it's reflexive, on the congregation of God? What they're doing is what we would call an ad hominem argument. They're attacking the person of Moshe and Aaron. They're accusing them of being people who are power hungry, who have basically imposed their rule on the congregation of God. So what do I see as being a problem in what I call the culture of debate, of argument? The problem is not just what are you raising? What is the issue? But how do you do it? To what degree is it that you bring up your point in a way which is respectful? Do you attack the person you're disputing, or do you respect them? Do you accuse them of things, or do you stick to the facts? And here I want to say, they are accusing Moshe and Aaron of imposing their rule. But the fact of the matter is, when God gave Moses his mission, Moses refused to do it. God imposed the mission on Moses. And we see throughout his career that there are moments when Moses says, take me out of here. I don't want this. I don't need this. Which means that from beginning to end, Moses is not somebody who is power hungry. In fact, in chapter 12 in Numbers, Parshat Bahalotcha, Moses is described as being the most humble of people by God. So that this is a total inversion of the reality. But there's another inversion of the facts. When they say, for the whole congregation is holy, and God is in their midst, which implies, so what makes you holier? Rashi actually says that this seems to be based on a fact, which is the revelation at Sinai. Didn't everybody experience the revelation at Sinai? Didn't everybody hear the word of God? Didn't everybody equally enter into a covenantal relationship with God? But in fact, if Sinai is the basis for saying we're all equal, but at Sinai itself, they weren't all equal. Because the people are forbidden to go up the mountain. They're fenced off. Moses is allowed to go up the mountain. It seems even Aaron is allowed to go up, but Aaron goes up partway, Moses goes up to the top. At Sinai, when the people are hearing God speak, there's a certain point where the people come to Moses and say, stop, let God speak to you, and you speak to us. We can't bear hearing God anymore because we're going to die. And therefore, if I come back to what the people are saying here, why have you raised yourself up on the congregation of God? Well, wait a second. They were given that position by the people themselves. When the people said to Moses, you be the one to speak to God and be the one to then be our liaison. So Moses didn't raise himself up. He was given that role by God and by the people. In that same chapter that I mentioned a moment ago, chapter 12 in Numbers, when Miriam and Aaron are speaking about Moses, God at a certain point comes to them and says, how could you be talking about Moses? Don't you realize that his prophecy, his level of prophecy, is qualitatively different from yours? So that God once again is saying, yes, there are prophets, but there are prophets. Moses is a prophet who speaks to God face to face. Other prophets have visions, see God through mirrors. Therefore, the point which I'm trying to make is, when you raise an issue, when you make a point, you have to be extremely careful to stick to the facts, to be very precise in the facts. In fact, anybody who's familiar with Talmudic discussion knows that the rabbis were extremely meticulous to make sure that whenever any statements are quoted, you quote exactly who made that statement. Whenever you have a law which is quoted, you are careful to quote the exact details of the law, and very often there will be a tremendous amount of discussion which revolves on minutiae, on very, very exact details of the law. So that when I now look at what's happening here with Korach, it would seem to be from this verse that the problem of discourse, which is going on over here, the idea of it being lo l'shem shamayim, is that number one, there seem to be slogans which are being thrown around, which don't necessarily correlate to the facts. There seems to be an atmosphere, which is a lynch atmosphere, which doesn't really encourage discussion. It seems to be that when a question is being ostensibly raised, it's not really a question, but it's a statement with no intention of engaging in a real discussion which will ultimately lead to some sort of resolution and truth. So that when I look at the contrast of what is a machloket l'shem shamayim, in the machloket l'shem shamayim, we have to create an environment, number one, of respect. No name calling, no projection, no accusations, where the whole purpose of the discussion is not to shoot people down, but to invite responses, where questions are being raised rather than statements being made, and where there's a feeling that whatever conclusion we come to, we will try to live together with that solution. A machloket, which is l'shem shamayim, ultimately leads to a constructive result, ultimately leads to people coming closer together, to a bonding relationship. We find in a few places in the Talmud when it speaks about Hillel and Shammai, despite the disagreements which they had, there was a sense of love and brotherhood which existed between them. In a machloket, which is lo l'shem shamayim, the result of the machloket is division and destruction. And perhaps this is also why the Mishnah does not mention Moshe as a party to the argument with Korach, but in the Mishnah speaks about Korach and his congregation. Because in fact, Moshe was trying to diffuse the situation. Moses is trying to find a way of bringing about some sort of resolution. Korach is trying to bring about an explosion. And what's also interesting is that there is no unanimity between Korach and the people with him. And I would like to bring up a point made by the Netziv, who I mentioned on other occasions, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the rabbi in the yeshiva of Elazhin in the 1800s, who says that there are three parties in the camp of Korach, each of whom has a different agenda, and we might say, who create an unholy alliance where the only thing that unites them is being anti Moses and Aaron, and ultimately perhaps anti-God. Korach, and this is the rabbinic understanding of Korach, is somebody who has an ego, who's interested in power, who feels that somehow he's not been given the proper role in his family structure, hierarchy, who feels he's been sidestepped, and therefore there certainly might be the element of projection that Korach, as a person who was seeking power, accuses Moses and Aaron of being power seekers. Datan and Aviram are anarchists, people who simply do not accept having an authority figure, and therefore will do everything to undermine Moses' authority. The 250 men are very interesting. According to the Netziv, the 250 men are actually sincere people who have this burning desire to serve God. And if I take his interpretation, it gives us another spin on the idea of a machloket shelo l'shem shamayim. And I'd like to end with this. Sometimes you may have people who are very sincere and very honest, who have legitimate questions, who raise issues, who truly want to do that which is right. But they may band together with other people who do not have pure motivation, who are looking for power, and unfortunately, who will manipulate them and use them towards their political end. Today we might call this combining religion and politics. And that combination can be deadly, can be destructive, to the ultimate detriment of everyone concerned. Machloket is something which can be very, very positive. There's a rabbinic comment which says, Talmidei Chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam. Scholars increase peace in the world. And I once heard an explanation of this statement, that because scholars are engaged in dialogue and discussion, and argue different points back and forth, they ultimately come to a better understanding because they have a more comprehensive picture. And through that, they bring about peace in the world. Because peace is something which can come about through greater understanding. But for that to happen, you have to be motivated l'shem shamayim. You have to be really seeking truth to be able to see the many different dimensions of a question. You have to be willing to also accept the conclusions wherever the question leads you. You have to be able to respect the people who you disagree with and to be able to see the validity of their position. And to ultimately be looking to be able to come to some sort of joint understanding that you can share. If we are able to have that culture of debate and dispute, if we are able to truly ask questions, to truly respect the people that we are engaged in, to truly be willing to understand and live with the conclusions that we come to honestly, then we will in fact be able to create a reality of peace and brotherhood. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Please tell your friends about this podcast series, and please let us know your thoughts and comments. Send us email via podcast@pardesusa.org. Thanks to Dr. David Bernstein, who is the executive producer of the Pardes from Jerusalem podcast series. Shalom and goodbye from Jerusalem.